Good morning and welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. I'm Jeff Snyder, and this is BRN AM for Thursday, November 19th, 2020. And our top story today, the stability and predictive power of financial literacy. And joining me now to discuss this and more is Jerry Walsh. He's president of the FINRA Investor Education Foundation and also a senior vice president of FINRA. Jerry, thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I, you know, you are absolutely speaking, you and FINRA, or maybe we're speaking your language because you're a lot bigger than we are. But this report about financial literacy and the stability and predictive power of it just really spoke volumes to me. So, and I think will to the audience. So let's jump in. Before we get to the report, let's tell the audience who FINRA is and what the foundation is.
FINRA is the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, and we're a not-for-profit, non-governmental regulator of an important slice of the securities industry. We oversee the brokers and the brokerage firms who sell stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and other investments to investors here in the United States. And we are not part of the federal government, but we are overseen by the Securities and Exchange Commission. So we're empowered by Congress to do the work that we do, but no tax dollars support our mission.
And, you know, I know of FINRA because in my days as a registered investment advisor, I had to go through a litany of different continuing ed and courses. People often hear about Series 7 or Series 6, 63. These are all certifications or licenses that would be under the purview of FINRA.
Absolutely. We license the professionals and we also we register the firms themselves. And there's a great deal that goes into that, as you alluded to, because to be a member firm of FINRA means that you have been subjected to capital requirements, to, you know, supervisory requirements, a raft of regulation to make sure that we're able as a regulator to carry out our mission of investor protection and market integrity. That's the whole goal of this self-regulatory model.
So let's jump into this education, because I love that there's a foundation and I love that you did this. You and the team at FINRA did this report. And what can you tell us? Give us some of the key takeaways and findings in this report.
Sure. Well, the foundation's whole goal is to help empower people with the tools and resources that they need for financial success throughout their lifespan. And we do that through both educational outreach and initiatives and research. And research underpins virtually everything that we do. And so for many years, we've been working on a project called the National Financial Capability Study. We started the first wave in 2009, and we've done it every 3 years since. So 2009, 12, 15, 18, and we'll be going into the field in 2021. But in addition to doing this survey where we have this massive sample of, you know, 25 to 27,000 people with each wave, but we also wanted to do some longitudinal research. So we worked back in 2012 with RAND, and we used a sample that they have called the American Life Panel. And we ran all of the questions on the National Financial Capability Study in that survey or in that sample. And then we did it again 6 years later. So instead of just doing a massive survey, which gives you a lot of great data, we're actually going back and asking the same people 6 years later answers to the questions. And so that enabled us for the first time to be able to get a longitudinal check on how people's attitudes and behaviors and their knowledge related to money had changed, whether they had changed, and if so, how they had changed. And the cool thing about this study is that we were able to get a baseline measure of financial literacy, financial knowledge, using 5 of the questions of the 100 questions that we asked people. And we saw that that knowledge was pretty stable over 6 years. It didn't change a whole lot. And to the extent that it changed, it was among younger people becoming more financially literate and some older people, older the age of 65, you know, lessening their financial knowledge. So we saw that it was actually pretty stable. But the cool thing was that it also helped us predict financial outcomes. Where your financial literacy level was in 2012 could be a marker for financial outcomes 6 years later.
Well, I couldn't agree more with what you're describing, because I think if you have a good baseline of financial knowledge, financial literacy, whether it's budgeting, whether it's how to invest, whether even what money is, how to handle debt, you are going to be a lot better off because you'll have these experiences, these tools that you will take throughout your life. In terms of the research itself, or in terms of the practical uses of this, will this help shape, for example, potentially shape, I should say, curricula in schools, K through 12 schools, but also colleges, universities, and also some of the other investor education that you're doing on the general FINRA platform?
We certainly hope so, because the more research that we do, and I have to give credit to our collaborators. We worked with the Global Financial Literacy Excellence Center at George Washington University, and also the University of Southern California's Dornsife Caesar Center, which is the Center for Economic and Social Research. Those researchers have really been trying to crack the nut of and many other researchers have been trying to crack the nut of kind of what works with financial education and what benefit does financial education provide? Because there are some naysayers out there who point to disclosures and say that, you know, education doesn't work. If education comes in the form of disclosure, you're asking people to read these complicated disclosures and they don't seem to be acting on them or changing their behavior because of them, then it doesn't work. And what we're trying to tease out is, how does it work? Does it work? And if so, how can it be made better? And, you know, so other research that we've done that's not the subject of this particular report showed that the rigor of the mandate for financial education in high schools actually impacts future behavior of people who are exposed. So the more rigorous the mandate, if you have to take a financial education class in order to graduate high school, you're more likely to have positive credit card behaviors and less likely to be incurring debt. So yes, this absolutely impacts what we teach, how we teach it. But I think fundamentally what it really underscores is that financial knowledge matters, because what this study shows is that the higher level of financial knowledge you have, the more likely you are to have these positive financial outcomes in the future, the more likely you are to weather a financial shock, the more likely you are to be planning for retirement. And those are important behaviors that we want to encourage.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Jerry, I want to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about maybe some key takeaways and some practical applications. How do we do more of investor education and get financial literacy out there? So you're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN AM. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms?
Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you got to start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're going to change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here. And if you're on Medicare, this is important. You're now entitled to eliminate copays and get dental care, dentures, eyeglasses, prescription coverage, in-home aids, unlimited transportation, and home-delivered meals, all at no additional cost. Plus, your zip code may have coverage with the Give Back benefit that adds money back to your Social Security check every month. Look, with the uncertainty of the virus and vaccines, you need to get everything you're entitled to. Here's the bottom line. Call to get significant benefits at no additional cost and see if your zip code has coverage with the Give Back benefit. Millions of people have trusted the Medicare Coverage Helpline. You can too. Call now. It's free.
Call 1-800-924-3920. That's 1-800-924-3920.
Welcome back. We're talking to Jerry Walsh of FINRA. Jerry, thanks so much for staying with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this is a very important topic. I'm warmed by this. I love the fact that you went back, not you, but the group cumulative went back to previous survey participants and queried them along the way. One thing that I wanted to ask you about is I think we need to have more investor education, more financial literacy. Is it more about the cadence, meaning the timing? Maybe it's something once a month. Maybe it's something once a week where people can either read, they can listen to something on a podcast, or they can, you know, get a quick education at school.
You know, it's the cumulative quantity and also the quality. So a one-hour workshop once in your life is not likely to change your behavior in the long term. But what we saw is that people who had been exposed to 10 or more hours of financial education, and especially if they considered that to be high-quality financial education, something that they valued and that they absorbed, they were more likely to, you know, have positive financial behaviors. They were more likely to be paying their credit card on time in full every month rather than carrying a balance. They were more likely to be planning ahead for future events like a child's education or their own retirement. And so that correlation of, you know, the exposure to a substantial amount of financial education over time definitely has an impact on people's ability to have higher levels of financial capability.
And when you think about practically how to put more financial literacy in place, and I know, you know, you're doing things within FINRA and at the foundation, but are you thinking about different levels of education depending on the age or the experience level? So we talked about in the first segment, young children, you know, K through 12, then there's college students, and then there are people, you know, my age and in middle age, and even mature adults. I mean, look, is it about that? Is it about finding different levels of education, things that will work with particular groups of people, cohorts of people?
It's very important to segment your audience by where they are in life, and also to realize that part of financial capability is access to financial products, to affordable financial products. Some of the people that you see who feel like they have too much debt, they may well live in a finance desert where their opportunities to get loans are limited, or they may have a lower credit score, which puts them out of conventional lending and turning toward alternative financial services like payday lenders or rent-to-own type operations. So the kind of financial education, the kind of financial capability building that can really make a difference for people will vary by their age, by their income, by their circumstance, where they are in life. I think it won't be too surprising for parents of children that the group that is most stressed in our financial capability study are the parents who have dependent children, right? And so the lessons for that group will be different than the lessons for the 50-somethings who are maybe beginning to be empty nesters and are thinking about their own retirement. So you always want to calibrate what you're offering. But it isn't just about workshops. It's also about making sure that there are programs, for example, workplace programs that provide the individual what they need. It may be a financial coach who helps them stick to a goal. It may be the availability of a loan from an employer to help an employee get through a rough patch. So it really varies.
Absolutely. And I think a big part of it is you can never know everything. And even at my age, I'm in my late 40s, or my parents' age, they're in their 70s. You can always learn something. And look, along the way, you might forget certain things. You may not have had an experience in over 20 years of buying a home. Mortgages and mortgage products will certainly change over time. So it's very important that you kind of check your ego at the door, so to speak, and realize that you always have something to learn.
Absolutely. And retirement products have changed and the retirement structure has changed. One of the things that we're likely to ask about in future waves of the capability study relates to health savings accounts, because 10, 15 years ago, those were far less prevalent than they are now. But now those are the types of things that can be useful for people to think about as one of the arrows in their quiver when they're thinking about sort of retirement and financial planning through employer-sponsored benefits.
Yeah, and look, we've actually seen action from Congress. From 2019, we had the SECURE Act, which obviously got a little derailed. It passed in 2019, but got derailed because we're in the midst of a pandemic. But there is active interest from the Congress. We know that there's a bill that was just passed. I guess it's a lame duck. We'll see how far it goes, but they're calling it Secure 2.0, and that's to provide potentially more access, more information to people. Maybe people don't have a workplace retirement plan. Maybe their company can't afford one for whatever reason. And so there are more alternatives now as a result of this legislation. So it seems like this is coming at the right time, and it's not just about workplace or big corporate plans or big governmental plans. There's a lot of work to be done to get more people into the system to save and also provide them with good information.
That's right. That's right. And whatever either employers or other providers of these savings products can do to sort of give those behavioral nudges, if you're repaying a loan and if eventually you have to opt out of, having that money just go into a savings account, wouldn't that be ideal? You repay your loan, $50 a pay period, and then all of a sudden you're saving, right? And yep. That's the kind of thing that, split to save, the idea that that's something that the Consumer Federation of America has been working on through their America Saves campaign, the idea that you encourage employers to allow people to direct their paycheck to more than one financial account, whether it's a bank or credit union checking account. How about also allowing a savings account or even an investment account? And those are the kinds of things that are creative solutions that employ those behavioral psychological elements.
Well, really impressive, Jerry. I could spend hours talking to you about this. This is fabulous. Congratulations to you, FINRA, all of your partners in generating this research. And we look forward to having you back on the program very soon.
Thanks.
And that wraps up this episode of BRN AM. Have a topic of interest or someone you think we should talk to? Drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the news in retirement, markets, technology, personal finance, so much more, all in one place, check out our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. So until tomorrow, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes.
Are you being audited and do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Is the IRS threatening to take more of your money? Don't fight the IRS alone. The Tax Doctor is here to help you negotiate your tax bill and reduce your stress. The IRS can freeze your assets and seize your bank accounts, but you can stop these IRS actions. The Tax Doctor will work with you using our years of experience to represent your case to help you get the best resolution under the IRS guidelines. Help is here to deal with the IRS to reduce your stress. We've handled thousands of cases, so we know what we're doing. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, do not call the IRS alone. Call a Tax Doctor now for a tax emergency analysis.
Call 800-224-6439.